Mastering excellence in recovery, what does that mean to you? I don't know about you, but maybe it could be restoration of self. Come and join us on Uplift today and find out what Vince Wishart has to say.
And I'm hitting the wrong button. I'm hitting and I'm now filling in. Ding, 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 ding. And oh,
if you're into integrative and holistic experiences, you're in the right place today. Hi, my name's Sarah Wade. I'm an art therapist and co-host of Uplift, joining you from Perth in Western Australia. Really looking forward to today's episode. And of course, in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, my co-host, best-selling author, amazing human all round, Mr. Neil Throssell.
Thank you for the wonderful words, Sarah. And I'm really excited to have my friend, Vince, on the show today. I'm really excited because I get to catch up. It's the benefit of having a friend as a guest. I get to catch up and find out what's new in Vince's life.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to see what comes of that. And of course, joining us today, we have a guest. He's come from British Columbia. This is Vince Wishart. He is a registered therapy counselor and so much more. Welcome, Vince. It's great to have you here with us.
Thank you. So great to be here.
And my first question is, have you read every book behind you?
No, but I'm making my way through it. This is actually, I share this office with my teacher, my Qigong teacher. So I've been under his tutelage for the last 4 years or so. So while I do my counseling here, he was doing his acupuncture here, but he's just now moved away. And so I told him, I said, I'm going to start signing out your books. And I have been, and I've been reading through. And he's First Nations too, of course. You know, I walk that way myself. So I've been reading tons of his books and ceremony books and how to skin hides and blah, blah, blah. In fact, I got two elk hides in my house right now. We're making drums out of them. Yeah, a lot of things like that.
So that sounds like you're still learning, Vince. What, you didn't just get your RTC and just rest on your laurels?
I don't know if this probably comes as a surprise to you, Neil, but I actually don't know nothing about nothing. That's why I ask so many questions. But my teachers, they know some things, so I can talk about what they taught me.
I love that. Is that like the more you know, the more you don't, or the more you know, the more you don't know? Or is that a different line of thinking there, Vince?
Getting pretty close, I would say so, yep. Yeah.
So what is one of those things then that they've taught you that you're absolutely blew your mind and has catapulted you into the space you're in today?
I would say ceremony. Of all the things, ceremony is the one that has been really pretty prolific in my life for the last 12 years. I started in Calgary, actually, with the Deer Tribe out there, sweating with them and stuff. And it's kind of a shamanic group. And then and I was going every Friday. And then when I moved to Vancouver, I started going to these sweats down at this place they call Sweat Alley. There's 13 sweat lodges there, all underneath the Lionsgate Bridge. And I was hanging out there and going to these things and going every week. And then I ended up going to one lodge where I was going like about seven times a month. And then the next thing you know, that I'm going up on Vision Quest. Next thing you know, I'm off to Sundance, being a Sundancer. Next thing you know, they give me a sweat lodge and I'm pouring sweats for the people out here. Yeah. So that's kind of how my walk has been. It's been pretty awesome though.
Well, it's an interesting segue. So Vince, what is it about ceremony that you think or you feel that is so empowering for people on a person? I'm going to add in for people who are discovering themselves, because a lot of new people that are not a traditional indigenous are trying these. So what do you think, in your opinion, or makes this so powerful, and how do you think it helps people?
So that's a great question, Neil. A lot of people are attracted to it. And the drum, you know, represents the heartbeat of our Earth Mother. The sweat lodge represents the womb space of our Earth Mother. And it actually comes from a time when the women were actually the ones that gifted these ceremonies to us. And it was a lot so that the men could actually have a bit of an iota of an understanding of how deep a woman can go in her moon time, that level of connection she has. And so us men, you know, we go in there to suffer so we can have just a little taste of that level of connection, right? And then the Lakota way of doing things, they have this thing called a moon lodge. And when a woman goes on her time out of sundance, she'll go into this moon lodge, and all the food is brought to her, and like crafts and smudges and all that thing. She's really looked after so she can sit with her prayer and be deep in her prayer. And then when she comes out, 7 days later, we honor her up by putting down and eagle down and everything, and they walk through it. It's a big production. We really honor up that for the women. And even when like I live with two life givers, and when they go on their time, then I kind of shore up the thing so that they can be more with their prayer, and I can do their chores and do the cooking and things like that. Right. So it's not really Western thinking, but it's like, yeah, it starts to turn into some of these more ancient practices around where we're at anyway.
So the ancient practices, what does it do for, with, you know, not saying, so like people are attracted to them, but what is the wholeness of the ceremony? Like, what is the intent of these ceremonies? Like, so, not just like collectively, like, What's the purpose of going into ceremony?
To deepen one's connection with himself, first and foremost, you know, and then that idea of the God out, you know, there's a God within, God without. So to connect to those spirit realms, to our ancestors that are maybe on the other side. A lot of people have these great memories of the ones that they can remember, but like, you know, our ancestries go way, way, way back. And when we start to connect with those ones that are way, way back there, we have to actually take that time, that space out, go 4 days to the top of a mountain with no food or water and talk to those ones. And when we make that much spaciousness, and when we go without food and water, then our body starts to die off, you see. When our body starts to die off, this little thing we got up in here, I think they call it a pineal gland, it starts to release this stuff called DMT. And that DMT then opens up the realms for us to be able to connect with those ones in a good way. So the hotter a sweat lodge is, the closer we kind of get to that realm in between the spirit realm and here. And so, yeah, not a big fan of cold sweat lodges, let's put it that way.
So...
Personally, I love that over time we've shown so many cultures, so many civilizations using their bodies, you know, with sound and storytelling and silence. And you've touched on this in various ways, both for men and women. Where do you feel like this is going, Vince? Are we bringing these new practices in with this, you know, updated science backing this? And it's going to flourish further? Are we going to get grounded and go backwards in time? Or where do you feel like this is going to take us?
Well, I don't claim to be anyone who forecasts anything like that. But I can say what I would like to see would be a return to kind of some old ways, you know. And the older the ways, the better they are. And the lodge that I take care of is an original Sioux teachings lodge. So it's like the same way that the Messiah, the first of the people who she brought this pipe, this thing called a chinupa. And she said, when you put the stem and the bowl together, you create balance, right? And we can walk in those ways. So that's a pretty neat thing to do. And along what I've seen in the Sundance type of ways is a lot of people, men in particular, become well from addiction. And that's been pretty paramount. So what I was doing in Vancouver is facilitating these groups, about 13 to 20 guys in these groups. And And we would work their 12 steps in a way it was a well-variety format. So it was basically, we had a big medicine wheel painted on the thing right down in the Skids of Vancouver. There's a little art gallery there, a First Nations art gallery. And I would have that for the evening every, I think it was Wednesday night or something like that. And we would work for 3 hours in there. And we'd pigeon parks right outside the door. And so everybody doing all their junk and things over there. But we did this there for you know. And these guys got well, you know, it was all done in ceremony right there in the Skids of Vancouver. And every single one of those guys that finished those set of steps never picked up again, 100% success rate, which is unheard of. Like the leading fellowship out there, I won't mention any names, but it's boasting an 11% recovery rate. And what that means is that they will stay clean for a year after they work a set of steps. So that's actually a lot lower than it sounds, you know?
Yes.
Right.
Quite shocking statistics, yeah.
Right. Yeah. The deeper we can go with it, the better, right? And I think a lot of these guys are carrying around this ancestral burden, you know? So our ancestors hand us stuff to heal in this life and all their patterns and their whatever. They didn't have therapy back then. Nobody could help them back then. They had to just knuckle down and bear it and get over it, you know? Like, come on, get going. Half on the back of the head, and that was it. Keep moving. But nowadays we have a smorgasbord of all these healing modalities and everything like that. People can get well real easy now. So now we don't really have any kind of excuse to not get well. I mean, it's just the same smorgasbord we live in. So now we get to do some of that work for ancestors. So this one elder told me one time, he said, you know, we heal 7 generations ahead. If we do our healing work in this time, we heal 7 generations ahead and 7 generations back too. So effectively 14 generations or more are being healed just by them watching us from the other side. Mm-hmm. Right.
So Vince, did you just wake up one day and decide that you wanted to help men with addiction, or was there a story behind this that would benefit our listeners and viewers?
You might say that. yeah, I mean, so, okay. I got to be raised in a religious cult, and it was pretty oppressive. And so I was kind of raised with the old iron fist, and you would call it abuse today, right? So when I was 19 years old, I made a decision that I was not going to go back. I just closed the door and off I went, and that was it. However, all 5,000 of my friends I was no longer allowed to talk to, including my own family, my little sister, cut off. And then I realized, oh yeah, right. I wasn't allowed to have any other friends that were worldly outside of the cult. So I was absolutely alone in the world. So I found my solace in drugs and alcohol. And I pursued that for a few decades until I finally figured it out. So now I have 17 years clean and sober today. But I remember my big turning point was like, I'd be in these relationships, hey? And then I'd be blaming that woman for all my problems. And I couldn't see these three fingers pointing back at myself, eh? And then after a long domino effect of failed relationships, I kind of looked and I realized the common denominator was me.
Funny how that happens.
and that's huge, because I suspect, like most people, they realize it early on, but it's not till we realize and we're willing to take responsibility for those three fingers pointing back at. Was there something that was the catalyst in that you were walking along and you just had an epiphany, or you were down? What was your turning point? Somebody talked to you?
It's really interesting. I mean, I was pretty walled up with ego, right? Ego stands for edging God out, is what I was told. And so all of these layers and layers and layers of protection mechanisms all around me to try to keep myself safe. But I didn't understand anything about this idea of the greatest strength we can have is that of being vulnerable. So I came to learn that later. And I teach that in the men's peaceful warrior groups that I do. Is we call it the man cave of vulnerability now, right? Where a man can come in and actually get those tears flowing and show some of those emotional releases. So as I went through the steps, there was 13 years there where I did a set of steps every year because I wanted to make sure I got it. And I did it some in different fellowships and then because I want to make sure, I got a little sex problem here. I got a little drug problem here. I got a little white powdery substance problem here. I got a little booze problem here, you know, all these different fellowships. So I was working the steps in all these different fellowships because I wanted to make sure I really got it. And then eventually I found this thing called Wellbriety, which was a First Nations approach to the steps. So it works with the medicine wheel, works with the elders' teachings. And I ran those in ceremony. And I tell you what, that was like incredible to see everybody recovering. Everybody finished a set of steps, never picked up again. Yeah, it was really something. So I took that into, I was the executive director of Quinintial in its Aboriginal Housing Place and Recovery Center for Men in Surrey. And we have a couple sweat lodges out back and things like that. And so I took it in there and worked with all those guys there. I was going to all my relations treatment center as well. And then doing that on the downtown east side with my own group. So it was really great to see just all these guys just getting it. Unparalleled. So it's kind of miraculous. So there has been a few things I've seen in recovery that where it's sort of like, I guess you as an NLP practitioner would understand what a pattern interrupt is. So these guys, they need that like big shocking thing that just bounces them right out of it. And one of the things that was a great pattern interrupt is once they understood that they didn't have to carry the burden of their ancestors anymore, and the only thing they were responsible for was to heal themselves, it lightened the load. They put it aside and they could really get something done. And that was like major transformation that I didn't see in any of the other fellowships. And then another thing I've been seeing that I'm quite interested in is the fact that the psychedelic psychotherapy revolution, whatever you want to call this, is breaking people out of their patterns, right? So somebody might go sit with Mother Gaia and she'll like show them something, and then it's like, oh, hey, my disease is cured because now I see it in a different way. So it's changing the perception. So a lot of the writings I'm doing is kind of around perception medicine. And so I see, like, you know, when we go to Sundance or we go to Vision Quest and we have this DMT sort of release sort of thing, all of a sudden now we have a new set of eyes, a new set of glasses, and now we can see things a little differently. And that seems to be making a lot of difference. And I know a lot of guys who have kind of like one-off sort of treatment centers. This one guy I know, they did a documentary on him, and he's like taking people that are on methadone or on opiates, and he takes their dosage down while brings this other dosage of this other medicine, psychedelic medicine, up. So by the time they're done their stay in 28 days, it's kind of like a full release dose, and they're getting it too. Like, they're getting it. And I'm just like, that's really interesting. And then I look at Dr. Gabor Mate, same. Yeah. Right? And it's just, yeah. Big fan of Dr. Gabor Mate. Like, a lot of his work has influenced my writings and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I saw a quote of his recently, and I'm going to read it out so that I don't muck it up. The opposite to addiction is not sobriety. The opposite to addiction is connection.
That's right.
With the sweat lodge and everything that you've been helping people with yourself, is that something that you've noticed? Is that a real... that connection that you're bringing together? Yeah. And is that missing in their lives before they go there? Well, what happens here?
Trauma.
Hello, trauma.
Yeah. I mean, First Nations people aren't the only ones who had trauma. I mean, they had a pretty tough go of it. But I mean, all of us, every single one of us is got ancestors that were just riddled with trauma. And so we're all carrying it. And so, and we're all really interconnected, aren't we? There is really no difference between them. We're just one big human organism, all breathing the same air in and the same air out, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm no addiction expert because my only addiction is coffee and my beloved. Those are the two those are my two addictions. And what I have witnessed is those that have addictive personalities and addictive, their community, they're not really, they don't feel they have a supportive community around them. And they're very much alone within themselves and within their thoughts, which they're using their addiction to hide.
Self-soothe.
And I was in Nishka in northern BC and with a men's group and working with, and you know, they allowed me in to help them. And I was so out of my realm, but they allowed me to be part of their circle. And I was so amazed at how much the Wellbriety part was bringing community, bringing these men, because it was all men's work, back to community and their understanding that no matter what they've done, they're a loving and important piece of community.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for reminding me of Nishka people. I got a great cousin. We're just best friends. She's Nishka and her mom, who's passed on to the spirit realm now. But yeah, just great people. I love the Nishka people. We used to go to that Hobie in Vancouver all the time. Those guys, it was quite the celebration, yeah.
So when I was talking with Vince and we were texting back or emailing back and forth, and I was like, Vince, you got to come on the show. What are you working on? You had mentioned you're working on a book. What the heck is this about?
Well, you know, Neil, I'm actually, like I told you before, I'm a little, some people call it attention deficit. I call it multi-passionate. And I just can't really, when I start getting in a flow state, I can't really stop. So I actually have 11 books in the go right now. So I'm a little spread out, but I'm working a deal with a publisher on 4 books, which are written. They just kind of need to be edited. And he's trying to do a 4-book deal with me right now. So this first book that I'm working on is called Mastering Excellence in Recovery. So it's basically trying to get into the deeper aspects around the trauma, around the connection piece, the Gabor Mate stuff, the Thomas Hubel stuff, and bringing it all into one big mix and with a pattern that I've developed called Evolved Recovery.
What is Evolved Recovery? What does it entail?
Evolved Recovery. It's sort of like something that I've been developing for a while. I can't say it's done, and it's probably always going to be ever evolving. But Evolved Recovery is sort of like, I have a bunch of notes here. I'm just trying to get it out of the way. Where did I put it? Not right there.
Joy the blob interviews, hi.
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of like a holistic approach. So you know, the body, mind, spirit, and the whole piece, even diet, everything. And it's like, how do we respect ourselves enough to really want the best for ourselves? How do we create that self-worth for people when they were told and brainwashed all their life that you are not worthy? You know, how do we break the patterns of that cyclical thinking, that hamster wheel thinking, and get them off of that hamster wheel and put them over into a place where they can find stillness and presence and be able to open to receive? So Qigong is phenomenal for this. It's like absolutely brilliant. It fixes everything. I got a video on YouTube of a 118-year-old man dancing around in the backyard like he's like 14. Yeah. Like, it is something. And you start looking at some of these cultures that practice this Qigong, longevity is huge. Like, they live a long time and they don't go to doctors. So there's something to be said about a daily practice with Qigong and going down into our inner world, our Wei Tuo, and exploring that map of the inner world once they can do that, and this is why I love my teacher, my Shifu. He is First Nations as well, hey? As well as being like, I think he's a black belt in 5 different martial arts, but he's really just focused in on Qigong. That's all he does now, just Qigong, Qigong, Qigong. And he's just absolutely amazing, amazing guy. It was such an honor to have him at the Sweat there a couple of weeks back, yeah.
So for those that are looking and may not have got the part, apparently Qigong is in or part of Vince's program. If you missed the hint.
That's right. So we have to go inside. So it's kind of like there's a story about this this grandson sitting at the fire with his First Nations grandfather, and he says, Grandpa, sometimes I get really scared, you know, especially when the lightning and this and that happens, and I get really scared. And he says, yes, grandson, I understand. But grandson, be like the buffalo. And he says, what happens when the storms come? It's the horses. You watch the horses and you get all scared and they run in chaos over here and over there and they're all over the place. But what does the buffalo do? The buffalo turns and faces into that north wind, into that cold, blistering wind. And he just hunkers down, just bears into it, just faces right into the storm of his own feelings, of his own fears, of his own anxieties. And then when the storm is over, he goes about his business because he's able to take care of it. And it kind of reminds me of Kelly Tobey. You probably knew Kelly Tobey. Hey, you know.
I did. He's was an incredibly gifted man.
So he was my mentor for a long time in Calgary. And I attended his weekly workshops for 5 years, deep dive experiential workshops. I just loved it. Loved it. So he said, you know, when you get this feeling come up and you want to, and you don't know what to do with it, and it's overwhelming or whatever, you go find yourself a room, you sit down, and you feel the feeling fully until it even feels like that feeling might kill you. When it doesn't kill you, guess what? You have victory over it. So it's the same kind of idea, right?
Yeah.
Not this watered-down experience some of us go about our lives with, this full-on experience, yeah.
But what do most people do? They're like, oh, I don't like feeling my feelings, so I'm going to go distract myself over here. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go do that, you know, and it's just this addictive realm. We might go drink a bunch of coffee. yeah, whatever we do for our little, what we call anxiety-binding behaviors in counseling.
Really?
So shopaholism, maybe a few sets of shoes is going to fix it this time. Who knows? Mm-hmm.
I know, sorry, I know because I have size 13 feet. I have a shoe fetish. If there's such a thing as reincarnation, I want to come back with size as a man. If I come back with a man, I want to have size 9 feet so that I can get all the shoes and all the.
My uncle, who is a tattoo artist, who taught me how to tattoo, he used to say, I would like to get a tattoo of myself on my whole body, only taller.
I love it. My dad used to say I'm tall for my height. So, yeah, I love all these little reinventions and, you know, ways that we can share our usness. You know, it's fantastic. I feel like when we do this and we reimagine our stories and we reimagine ourselves, that's where our next chapter of breakthrough comes through. That's my personal experience. Is that your experience too, Vince?
You just kind of reminded me of my NLP teacher, Nayirka. And she used to say something real powerful. What was that? She used to say, oh, shucks, it was right there on my tongue. It's just gone. Ask me the question again.
The reimagining of our stories and ourselves that opens that new chapter of
right growth. Yeah. So it's like asking better questions, right? So it's like, why is this happening to me, is a pretty disempowering question, and a lot of people are kind of in that, right? But it's like, what can I do even better than I'm already doing to have the outcome that I really, really want? You know, like, we just got to ask better questions. You know, and when we're Well, because there's like very limiting questions. It's like, why is like putting a big block for the universe to manifest what it is that we truly need and desire. But we can just reword it a little bit. When we learn to change our languaging, the whole world around us changes. Because we're either conscious or unconscious creators, and whatever emits out of our mouth becomes an intention, becomes a prayer, and then it just comes into being. So this is what I'll be the first to admit, I actually wrote a book too. It's this other book I wrote is called Hi, my name is Vincent. I'm a recovered conspiracy theorist. So there was a time when I was pretty hyper vigilant around that kind of stuff, hey, and I found that I was like sort of speaking this into existence. I almost kind of had a realization that I was sort of like doing the dirty work for maybe whoever the guys who are trying to do the thing. So I've learned to kind of curb that, right? And it's kind of funny. So I like to poke fun at myself sometimes, and that's what this book's all about: poking fun at myself and the whole idea of it and everything. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
So I'm going to come back. We're about halfway through the show. So I'm throwing you Mastering Excellence in Recovery. We had talked about that you've got an offer and a gift for our viewers, whether it's watching live replay or on any of the social medias and podcast channels. So what is it that you, if you want to stay connected to Vince, go to this website, but what is it that you want to share with these people?
Yeah, so basically after writing this book, I've created a course. And this course this new one is a beta test model. So I sent you the link, and so people will get onto that. It's looks like it's going to launch in about the fall. Along with another course that we're launching, my beloved and I together, so called Compass of Clarity, which is all about emotional fluency. And so this one here is about this mastering excellence and recovery. So everybody will get the book, of course, when the book is all the edits are finished and done, and I'll send everyone who takes the course a copy of the book, and then a beta test at like kind of half price to get people to jump into this group and get the testimonials and all that kind of stuff. So, and there's even a scholarship program for people to take that one too. And so if they hop onto that link, then they'll just get onto an email responder, which is all built out, and it'll just drip feed all the information to them as they need it.
Excellent. And so what I heard is Vince is doing something crazy, but that's because from the generosity of his heart, because he's going to beta test it, even though he's got years of experience or decades of experience, and he's done this similar pieces many, many times to beta test this program. He's offering it at a reduced rate, and for the benefit of a reduced rate, he's asking for a little in return, which is testimonials. And yeah, so this could be your excellent opportunity, if you're listening to this live or in replay, to jump on and get a world-class program for an exceptional deal. So I highly recommend that you jump on to lovelive.ca at Mastering Excellence in Recovery and join with Vince and see what he's got to share with you, because so far it's been, for the first 30 minutes in the show, it's been wonderful. So we've got more tidbits coming to you as we go, or more truth bombs, or more gold, more insight, whatever your true term is. Welcome.
And actually, I've got a plethora of testimonials already, and it's not really that so much as because I've never been money motivated. I don't know if you know that about me, Neil. I am really service oriented, so this is to get the message out to a broader audience quicker, because I'd like to get this all the way across the five English-speaking countries as a model of recovery. That's the vision for this. So, you know, I don't want any kind of barriers there to get this message out there as fast as possible, especially
That's a strong point. You know, people struggling within recovery often don't have the money to do those things that we know are restorative and can help them to help themselves. I love that you're offering this of yourself and of your program. For people who are interested in getting the scholarship, is there anything in particular that you'd like to tell them how to get that?
Well, there is an application form, and it might involve having a look at their last year's taxes and things like that too, right? It's not like we're not giving things away, but it's like it's got to be within reason, you know, those sort of things. And the other thing I want to mention about that book is that the subtitle of it says for people with five or more years clean and sober. So what I'd noticed, and the reason that's sort of my target market is people with longer term recovery, is because they have a bit of an issue with, so they come around the rooms when they're a newcomer, they're all praised up and everybody's loving them up. And then after a while, all of a sudden they're not a newcomer anymore. And it's like, oh, you got this. So we don't need to spend any attention on you. And if they're not like really, really working on themselves, sort of self-motivated to do that, that's where I see a lot of people going back out. And unfortunately, in this day and age, with the type of drugs that they have, they usually don't make it back. Like the death rates are so much higher than when I was doing it, you know? So that's kind of my target. Now, if somebody who has less than 5 years sober wants to take this on and think they can do it, I will support that all the way through, and that'll be really exciting. Right. But I see people with 30 years clean and sober, and if they're not doing their inner work. And one time in Calgary, there was this place called the Garnet Block, and a lot of people called it the Friday Night Fights. It was down in Kensington, and it was this smoke filled meeting. You could hardly see your hand in front of your face. It was a crazy old meeting. Started at 10 p.m. at night and went to like 5 in the morning. Sometimes it was nuts. And it had this old guy in there, and I won't mention his name, but he, if somebody would start whining in the meeting, he'd bring over a Raggedy Ann doll and put it on there, you know. People would fight in that meeting, the fisticuffs, and it was a crazy old meeting. But I remember this one old guy gets up there one time, and he says, "I got 19 effing years sober, and I ain't never done no effing set of steps." So I was like, oh, can I have what you have? Oh, I want to be angry just like you when I'm at 19 years. So the point is that we don't do the work, we're going to get angry, right? And in my book, I have a chapter in there. It's called Itchy, Bitchy, and Twitchy in Recovery. Because if we're not doing the work, all of a sudden we start to get fidgety, and all of a sudden, you know, all our little traumas are starting to tweak up on us, and we're getting, you know, that's a kind of like a precursor to someone going back out. So the work's got to be done. Like, it has to be done. And what is the easiest way to do that? And how do we get people willing to have a look at their own stuff and have a look at that work, right? Mm-hmm.
Good question. Mm-hmm. So is it where awesome. The work of people like Dr. Peter Levine and Stephen Porges, and they're using the mind-body connection, and you mentioned, you know, having the itchy, bitchy, and twitchy, I think you said, you know, those jittery moments, and just letting it out of your body helps? Or are you thinking about something else?
I'm talking about the people who are all sort of walled up, and what's coming to mind, I think it's Napoleon Hill who talks about, I think it's called like a crap sandwich, you know, where you come in to someone, if you got a criticism, you want to think through your criticism really well. And then you want to come in with three gratitudes, right? Three gratitudes, lay on the gratitudes, then bring in the criticism. I think it's called heavy in approbation, yet lavish in praise. And then you end on your greatest gratitude. So basically you edify, 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 their heart opens up like this, and then boom, in with the criticism. Oh, and that really hurts, right? Because they've now just opened up to you. And then you give them the greatest edification you can. And he says, this is the way to win in business. And I've tried it, and it works like a charm. So it's the same with rapport, you know, building that rapport. And we need to open up those hearts a little bit, because those, they get pretty wound up and pretty, you know, tightened up. And so we have to unfurl some of that and open up that heart again, so that people can be willing to look at themselves, willing to look at the person in the mirror. And I do all these programs where I have, like in these treatment centers, I would get the guys, it was the only time they're allowed to do graffiti in the treatment center, is that they're going to go in the mirror and they're going to write an I am statement on the mirror, right? And whatever follows it had better be empowered. And then we're going to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it in all kinds of different octaves and tones in the mirror until they find that one that just resonates with them, that kind of cracks their own heart open. Wow, was that ever powerful. That works so good with those guys. It was so amazing. I just loved it. So I do that with most of my clients too.
Mm-hmm. I love the addition of the tone and the different octaves there. I think a lot of us have, you know, done mirror work or spoken about mirror work before, but for those of you who would like to take that next level, give those octaves a go. Change your voice up. Find yourself in the moment. Oh, absolutely love this conversation, Vince. When people are 5 years or more into their recovery and you're starting to notice that maybe that they might be turning back or turning forward, what are the telltale signs of one way or another for you as a facilitator?
I mean, after I've been around for a while, you can start to see darty eyes, shifty eyes, you know, down, the posture says it all too, you know, are they breathing from the top or the bottom of their lungs? I mean, that comes with a little bit of experience. We'll see those things. But the thing is it's really about their actions. What, at the end of the day, what did their day look like? How many people were they helping in that day? Did they have a service-filled heart? And these are some of the things that they are going to realize when they start to become selfish. Self-centeredness is at the core of addiction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of us see that in addiction. It's the self-awareness and then like in the self-acceptance that helps us to get to that next stage of really restoration of self. Is this something that your program helps to facilitate?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We love that. It's all about, I just love helping someone break open. And sometimes in order for them to break open, you got to get in there and rock the boat a little bit. You know what I mean? Kelly Toby used to do it with me. He showed me how to do it in a good and loving way. But you got to get in there and rock that boat. You can't just like try to pussyfoot around these things sometimes. Sometimes you got to get in there and get them angry. You know, once they're angry, we can get that big anger release come up. Like we do this thing called a fourth step. And what that is it starts out in anger, like the big anger release. So they come to me, it's like, I'm really mad at somebody. Okay, let's do this then. Tell me what you're mad about. And I'll just stand there and I'll just be the person they're mad at. Okay, I'm now your mom or whatever, whoever that person is. And then they just yell at me, until they get it all up and out. And then underneath of that is the vulnerable feelings underneath, right? When you did this, I felt kind of stuff. And then, but then there's the just like when's, right? Oh, and this is reminds me of just like when I was 7 years old and dad used to do blah, blah, blah to me, right? And then there's the correction, which is like whatever they believed about themselves and the suspicion of self. Okay, like maybe I'm inferior, whatever that is, or I'm not worthy of love or whatever that might be. What is the opposite of that? Well, I am worthy of love. So the correction at the end is like, yes, will you please accept me and show me that I'm worthy of love? And we say, yes, I will do that for you. Do you accept that you're worthy of love? And then they'll say, yes, I do. And maybe if their vocal tone isn't like totally engaged with that, like, I'm worthy. Oh, yeah, what percentage of you is worthy, you know? Oh, 30%. Okay, 30%. That's great. You want to take a breath and breathe that and expand into that and see how big you can make that? You know, they might make it 50. Oh, do you want to take another breath and expand that? You know, we're going to try to get at some of those bigger numbers, right? And sometimes it just, they might go home with 60, but it's better than what they came in with.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were talking in the green room that you also like to, you're very creative, so you also like to bring in art in as a therapeutic modality to help people. What's your favorite one? If I'm a creative, and what's your favorite one that you personally like to go to if you're looking for a creative release?
Myself, I'm a painter. I'm a fine art painter. Actually, my beloved and I are working on a tarot deck right now. We're painting a tarot deck. Yeah. As a collaboration. So like I painted the magician as a self-portrait. And then Rebecca, she painted herself as a high priestess as a self-portrait. And now for the empress and emperor, we're going to switch roles. She's going to paint me and I'm going to paint her, you see? And yeah, so it's turning into something really cool. Just did the fool card. Fool card is just, it's, oh man. Yeah. We've got this really amazing model, this really neat kid who just is the epitome of the fool. And so, yeah, oh, it's just such a great card, you know?
See, I ask these questions because I believe that every great coach needs to look after themselves, and every great teacher facilitator needs something. So that was my sly way to see to find out how Vince is looking after himself, because he's telling all of us that he's doing, you know, all of these works for others, but every person needs self-care. So here I'm like listening, and yeah. So thank you for modeling that you are looking after yourself, and in such a beautiful. I have one of a print of one of Vince's works of art in my kitchen. Your frog.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Right. Cool. Right. Yeah, that was an Airbrush one. Yeah. And like I'm kind of multimedia. I once again, you know, I'm multi-passionate, right? So it's hard for me to just stick with one thing sometimes. So Rebecca went over to Ireland to go see the stone circles in Ireland. And while she was away, I went to the mountains and I got all this slate, two colors of slate. And I made I surrounded the bathtub with this like beams of light, you know, all with this slate, and it came out so good. But I also have a wood shop on the side of my house too. And I do a lot of work with slabs, and I've got like this room that I broadcast from in my house where I've taken trees, come up like this, the branches come out like this, and then the slabs go like that. And then the next part of the tree comes up. So it looks like the tree is growing right through the slabs and all the way up to the ceiling and stuff like that. So and I make wood bowls, like big ceremonial wood bowls and stuff like that. And I don't know, I just love it. My dad really worked with wood, and I'm trying to honor him up a little bit that way and stuff. Yeah.
I love that. I did similar things with trees. I think, you know, we're so in tune with nature, and when there's times that maybe we can't get out, for me, I created most of my trees when I was on crutches from various operations, and I couldn't really get outside in nature in my moon boot or my casts and stuff. So I literally painted on the walls, and part of the, you know, you mentioned the branches coming through, and I had paintings hanging off them, and it was interactive, and it helped replenish what was missing in my life, and that made such a huge difference. And piggybacking off what Neil was saying before, for me, in between client sessions, it might involve jumping on a trampoline to let it out. One of the things I've been doing a lot of recently is bilateral drawing, and just going with the flow, moving both my hands at the same time and just letting it out. And I got to tell you, it is so calming and so restorative. And, oh, have you experienced this before, Vince? Have you done this with your clients before or personally?
A little bit. And that's actually why we started this business. But so we've only done a couple of retreats since we started, because we've just like, you know, it's go, go, go. And it's like nothing ever seems to work out exactly the way you planned. But the ones that we have done, we've been able to do some of that stuff. And so like our idea is the in-person retreats that we're doing is to put up a great big canvas. And then everybody, as they walk in, has to paint on it, right? And then when they go out for lunch or breaks or whatever, they do some more. And pretty soon it's going to become something as a group effort, right?
And one of the things that I personally love is whether it's as a group or as an individual, it's often that first mark that people feel so anxious and worried about, like this brand new perfect piece of paper or canvas or whatever it is, who am I to make a mark on that? You know, there's a lot of self-doubt can come up for a lot of people. And I believe in a group situation, you know, we can, you see a little bit of a social hierarchy come out, like who comes first, but the togetherness of the group as you move through the process and you interact with each other, it's such a awe-inspiring experience. The hairs on my arms are literally sticking up right now thinking about various experiences, and I'm sure you guys can relate with it, you know, the people on the screen that you are listening to and watching, or you as the audience member. I'm curious how you relate. Neil, I know you've done a lot of men's work. Is this an experience that you've seen left, right and centre, or is it something that you feel could come into more practices?
Everyone needs to express, I believe everyone needs to learn to express their creativity. And depending on where you pick the men up from and where they are in their journey, sometimes they're so stuck that they cannot even fathom picking up and trying something creative. It's so out of their realm. Yeah. And so the simplest things, writing, you know, two lines of a love letter to themselves or to another is absolutely terrifying. To others that are different parts in their journey, containing them to 20,000 words is the picture of the yeah, I can't do it in less than 20,000 words, or I can't do it in less than 100 canvases. So it's wherever they are. But creativity and finding whatever medium it is. I just came back from a men's weekend, and part of the weekend was movement. And men dancing with men is the very first time you're trying to encourage this can be quite stoic. But by the end of the weekend, it was a good old-fashioned dance. It was so much fun, and it was because they felt safe and it was creative. So movement is some, and some men move easier than others, or when some men have absolute flowing bodies and grace and rhythm. None of that resides in this body, but it was still so much fun.
Awesome. And Sarah, you know, it kind of reminds me of my uncle. He when he was teaching me how to tattoo, he would teach me on a restaurant napkin. He said, you got to draw on a restaurant napkin because it's very weak. You got to take a ballpoint pen. And if you tear that while you're drawing, then you got to throw that one away and start another one. And he wanted to see one a day for 365 days before he would apprentice any new apprentices. And then they would develop a real light touch in doing that. Eh? And so he would say, like, if you can't think of something to draw, draw a question mark on there. And then something will come from that. And oftentimes it was a rose, right? And a rose would start it and everything like that. Yeah. So it was a really, really neat piece. And I've taught that to all my apprentices too.
I like that too. I've also noticed that roses can come with question marks. The other thing I've noticed can come from question marks are onions, you know, and the layers that we experience, and to physically get out our thoughts and our feelings and to make something concrete, something three-dimensional, well, not necessarily three-dimensional, what well, can be if you use clay or Play-Doh, but something that's physical. It's something you can't take away from somebody, that this is how I feel, this is how I am right now. And that, again, I believe that connection ensues from that. When people are starting to work with you, the connection, do they bring friends with them? Do they make friends in your program? How does that work, Vince?
Usually people in that come in for some sort of deep dive experiential exercise where they get vulnerable in front of other people are usually going to end up being friends with those other ones that are in a group, right? That's the dynamic. When we can let down our guards for a while and let ourselves really be seen, that really creates such a deep connection, It's almost, I think it's impossible to not, you know. I don't think anybody go, oh, look at that guy getting all vulnerable. You know, I haven't seen it anyway. Maybe it's possible, but I haven't seen it.
Guys, on the screen right now, if you're interested in working with Vince, please go ahead and reach out. He's an amazing person with so much to share. Curious to know what book is going to come next then with all of these 11 books in the process. Is it going to be a book about writing all these books, or what's coming next?
It's called Men's Introductory Guide to Emotional Fluency. It's already written. Already done. Yeah. Just got to get published. All done.
So if, as we're headed to the end of our, I can't believe it's been an hour. It's like, but I shouldn't say that, because anytime Vince and I get together, for me, time flies very quickly, because we're easily able to jump into some depth and be honest and real with each other. And I miss my brother, who's I haven't seen in many years. I'm going to ask you to think for a few seconds, Vince, before I put you on the spot, of what would you like to leave our viewers and listeners and our audience with, whether they're watching it in live or replay. But I'm going to model the way that no matter where you are on your journey, whether it's beginning your journey, you're just someone exploring the infancies of who you are, or whether you're a seasoned veteran and you have this so-called grumpy picture of yourself or the angry picture, just remember, you're worthy of pursuing all of your hopes and dreams. You are worthy of everything that you could conceive of. But all I ask is you take one step forward towards your dreams, and you will see that God, universe, life will move towards you, but you have to take the first step. Vince, what would you like to leave our viewers and listeners with?
Okay, well, I'm going to go with the step thing a little bit. So it's kind of like when we set out to do something, a lot of times people think they have to see all the steps, all the steps, all the steps, all 5 years down the road. I got to know exactly what I'm going to be doing every single day. And then they just don't do it because they just don't have it, right? It's just, it's too overwhelming. But I like to give the analogy of there's a fog, deep fog. And we get a lot where I live, like really deep, thick fogs, eh? And then it's like, you know that there's a stream to cross, but you don't want to step in the water. You don't want to, you know, but there's these stepping stones there. And then all of a sudden the fog clears just enough. You can see one stone just far enough to get one step ahead. Right. And then, so you bring your other foot to that rock, and then the fog, you wait a little bit, and then the next step appears. And so you take a step to there, and then you bring your other foot and you wait. And then all of a sudden in the stillness, right? In the stillness is important. The stillness, you got to get still to get really clear on where you're going, because you're never going to do it thinking from your lower mind. You got to think from your higher mind. We do that with the breath in Qigong. We get still, right? This is how we, in our course, Transforming Through Triggers, this is how we, number one thing to do out of the four steps is to take that breath first. Somebody's coming at you, you know, and rather than retaliating or putting up your dukes or doing any of that, you could take that breath and speak back from your higher mind, right? Yeah. And the breath, all the yogic practices, Qigong, all of it. Like we've learned 65 different breath types so far in Qigong. And some of those ones get us pretty high. I actually have a chapter in my book about how to get high in recovery and get away with it.
Love it.
Because it's a good high, right? It's good for you, and you're psychedelic, like you're all tripping right out. It's better than mushrooms or whatever. Like, yeah, something. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know about you, but I've really enjoyed this episode. Vince, we thank you so very much for joining us. I wish you all the best on your ventures forward. From my perspective, I just want to say I love you. Whether you're having a loving life, I love you.
I receive. Much love back to you.
No, You're designed the life you desire. You're worth it. See you next time on Uplift.
Till next time.